Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. It's House.
Pitch, please.
Pope.
Put us out of our misery.
Rooster.
Oh, boo-hoo.
And Bison.
They got to get their shit together and fast.
SMQBs, this is episode 217. Happy Memorial Day, fellas. How's everybody doing?
Happy Memorial Day.
Good. Doing well. Happy Memorial Day to everyone.
Yeah. Hey, Rooster, who are you bringing to the bar this holiday weekend?
Before I say who it is, I'm going to just preface it with, ever since I was a little child, most new pitchers on the New York Yankees struggle in their first year, no matter how good they are, with the exception of Catfish Hunter when he first came from the A's, maybe Mike Mussina, who came over from the Orioles. Really good pitchers have just had a hard time adjusting to playing in the Bronx, and that would include Gerrit Cole and Rodon recently, and our new closer, who now isn't the closer anymore, Darren Williams. It's just a big transition, except for Max Fried. Max Fried is 7-0 with a 1.29 ERA and is, you know, competing for the Cy Young at this point in the AL. I'd love to take Max to the bar and just get to know him and figure out how his blood runs so cold, because that is a tough task to come in. The Yankees were touting Rodon as their ace this year once Cole went down, because they didn't want to put any pressure on Max Fried, and Max Fried said, "Hold my beer, I'm the ace."
That's what you want, man. That's what you want out of your your ace, right?
Yeah.
All right, good one. Pope, what do you got?
I'm bringing Lando Norris and congratulating him. Maybe we'll have a little champagne to celebrate his Monaco victory. And, you know, we weren't writing him off, but we were definitely questioning whether he had what it was going to take this year to push back against his McLaren teammate Oscar Piastri and stay in the race. And not only has he done that, but it seems like he's got his groove back. And hopefully he'll bring his girlfriend and we'll have an enjoyable drink.
Amen, brother. I was going to say, I'm going to take him to the bar and toast him just for that accomplishment alone. yeah, I think that was an important race for him to win.
Calm down, geezer. She's 20. Yeah.
No, she's older than that, but not much. House, what
he's young, too. Come on, man.
Happy Memorial Day, boys. I am going to bring Leo Messi to the bar. We're going to talk memories, I think, today. And I just think for all of us, when we get a chance to see what will be the all-time greats live in the flesh, it's such a gift. I mean, you know, there's still, you know, Bison, when you get to go to games and see Ovi, like we have to really be grateful for that opportunity to see players that are all-timers. And although it's just Major League Soccer, I saw Messi play the other night, and at 38 years old, down 3-1 with 5 minutes to go, take over a game and score an impossible free kick and have an assist that led to a tie of a game. And the guy is just mesmerizing to watch. And even at 38 years old, playing against these young kids and dominating is just a joy. And I want to take him to the bar, buy him whatever he wants, and say, thanks for the memories.
Yeah, nice. That's a good one. Well, I'm going to go take someone posthumously to the bar. Is that how you say that? I can never get that right.
Posthumously.
Posthumously. On this Memorial Day, and I'm going to bring Pat Tillman to the bar. I think it's important.
Whoa. Good for you, man. That was going to be my first memorable.
Good one.
Yeah, well, it's worth remembering someone like that. So Pat Tillman, I'm sure all our listeners probably know exactly who he is, but Tillman came out of Arizona State, wasn't really a highly touted recruit. In fact, was drafted, I think, the 266th draft pick or something. He's actually born the same year I was, 1976, came out, drafted by the Cardinals, played 4 years. At one point, I think he was making $21,000 as a signing bonus. And then at some point the Rams offered him five-year, $9 million contract. The guy turned it down out of loyalty to the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, this guy was just different. And then after 9/11, he hung it up and enlisted in the army. And unfortunately, of course, he was killed. A little controversy over that. That's not the important part. We won't get into all that today.
He was a Ranger.
This guy was the ultimate who walked away from a very successful NFL career to give it all for his country. And so that's incredibly unusual and something that we should keep in mind and remember.
You know, I was 39 years old when that happened. I had two little children at home. When the planes hit the building, they were both sick. And I had to, you know, let one of them get out of the room because he was too young. And the other one, Michael and I watched this. And I sat for a solid month in a funk at my office. I was so, I don't know, maybe depressed. I just felt like I needed to do something. And sitting at a law firm desk just wasn't the answer. And I was searching for something to do. And Pat Tillman was my hero because he acted. And I thought, you know, the guy doesn't have any children. He's younger. I wish I could do that. And it was the AAJ, Trial Lawyers Care, thing that kind of got me out of it. Volunteering to represent the victims' families for the compensation fund. But Pat Tillman will forever have a special place in my heart. The guy was probably one of the top five safeties at the time and was making a good amount of money for a safety back then. Just walked away from it and said, I'm going to volunteer to do what's right for my country. Just a true patriot.
Yeah, he was awarded the Silver Star and the Purple Heart, of course. I don't know. I mean, those are incredibly noble and honorable awards to get, and yet they still don't tell the full story of what that guy did for the country somehow. No. So,
I commend our listeners to read the book about Pat Tillman. I think it's by John Krakauer, if I remember correctly.
Okay. All right. Well, before we jump into it, you know, Rooster, I was traveling this weekend. I was on the road. We'll talk a little bit about the Indy 500 later. But I was also able to work, log in and do a little work. Had all my cases at my fingertips. How is that? How'd that happen for us?
Well, you know, that's a perfect message to our friends who run law firms and are looking to be more efficient. Our show tonight is brought to you by Assembly Software, which is really puts out the best case management product on the market. They were well known for trial works, and now they've taken it to the cloud with Neos. And like you say, you can have access to everything in your law firm on the road through Neos cloud-based system. And now they've got a really nice AI program that's being developed, that's being implemented with Neos to help you put together letters and other things. If you really want to up your game on the efficiency front, go check out Assembly Software.
And you know, having software is only good if you get cases, right? If you don't have any cases, you don't have to worry about software, right?
That's true, friends. If you are tired of looking for the right company to develop your website and your digital marketing, look no further than Digital Law Marketing, because I'll tell you, the secret is a lot of the other companies that you've dealt with in the past are too busy trying to market your competitors and not spending enough time on your site. Digital Law Marketing offers you an exclusive partnership in your region, and they have proven results over the years since I've used them. Organic originations have gone through the roof, and it's all because of their efforts. DigitalLawMarketing.com.
Good stuff. And we have one more sponsor we'll touch on a little bit later, but let's get into it. We're going to do a little around the horn. House, what are we talking about today?
Well, listen, I'm so glad you guys started off with what Memorial Day is really about. And remembering those who served and folks like Pat Tillman and all the folks who give us the freedoms that we truly cherish. For us, we talk mostly about sports on here, and this gives us a chance at least once a year to talk about some cherished memories that we have in the sports realm. And so this is the SMQB's own version of Memorial Day. And I tried to assemble, and I know we'll go around the horn, some of the most amazing memories. I got to tell you guys, I tried really, really hard to not be a homer on this, and I really failed. You know, our listeners should know that I know Pope tells the story probably the best among us, that this podcast really started out based on an indelible memory of a World Series. I think it was the Cubs Indians, and we just stayed up and up and up. Yep. And we were all on a text chain. And like, I don't know, beyond those folks that live in Cleveland, Chicago, that series was about as good as it gets. And I try to think about things like that, like we've watched together, but I assembled my own little Rushmore of the greatest memories that I think will always – well, I shouldn't say always because things could top it. October 6, 2010, I watched Roy Halladay pitch live a no-hitter in the National League Division Series against the Reds. Seeing any playoff game in baseball where every pitch counts is electric. Seeing a no-hitter from really – even though life was cut short for Roy Halladay, one of the greats, was, again, I'll never forget it. On October 29th, 2008, the Phillies showed up to restart Game 5 against the Tampa Bay Rays. I really wish Milk was here for this one, so listen carefully, Milk, so I can walk you down memory lane. But Game 5 had been not rained out. It had been rain suspended a few innings into the game. It was miserable and cold in October of 2008. And it was not only suspended one day, but a second day. And me and a couple of my buddies, Git and Derek, we went down to the Sixers home opener. And they started the home opener early on purpose. And at halftime, we left to see if we could buy some tickets on the street, knowing that a lot of people that went to the originally started Game 5 couldn't complete it, and so that you would be able to scalp some tickets. And we set a budget as to how much we were willing to spend, and we took a walk, and the first guy we passed came within the budget, but it was like at the very top of the stadium behind home plate, and we thought maybe we could do better. And we walked up and down the street, and we could not find another ticket to get into the World Series, and we thought we had screwed ourselves. And so we came back around, and sure enough, I mean, the most serendipitous moment in sports of my life, we ran into that same guy on the street, and we said, by any chance, do you still have those tickets? And we bought them from him, and as Git likes to say, other than the birth of his children, the little ticket scanner showing a green light that those were good tickets was the happiest thing of his life.
Yeah, because it wasn't until then that you really knew how this story was going to end.
There were a ton of scam stories from that. The people that supposedly bought tickets that could still be used couldn't be used. We got in. We watched the Phillies win their first World Series since 1980. That was incredible. The only time I have ever rushed a field in sports, on December 3rd, 2022, I went down to see my beloved Tulane Green Wave face University of Central Florida in the AAC Championship. And it was at Yulman Stadium. My kids were in college at the time. UCF was favored, and we demolished them 45-28. And that was the first AAC championship for Tulane. Everybody in the stands rushed the field. I rushed a field. I was on the field with my beloved Tulane, with my own children. I will never forget that for the rest of my life. That was the jump start to us playing in the Cotton Bowl and upsetting USC. And of course, you all know the number one, February 9th, 2025. Bitch slap, smackdown, destruction of the vaunted Kansas City Chiefs in New Orleans with my family. 40-22 victory. We are the champions, my friends. I cannot wait to hear your memories. That's my Rushmore.
Man, you brought dates and everything. That was was hardcore.
Wow.
That was hardcore. All right. Well, I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I sort of wish we hadn't ended with that last one, but whatever. it's your memory, so that's fine. Pope, what do you got?
Not exactly knowing the assignment, I've kind of went all over the board, but I think I've got kind of a smorgasbord of sports memories. I mean, I guess the early days, my indelible memory was USA over USSR in the hockey game. I was just a teenager, and I was 13, I guess. It was something I'll never forget. I mean, it was obviously an amazing moment in sports. Shortly after that, 1982, I was still in junior high in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, when Carolina won their national championship over Georgetown. And I'll never forget Georgetown, Freddie Brown passing to James Worthy, wrong guy, and Carolina winning their first championship for Dean Smith. And a fun story about that is on our honeymoon, my wife and I were at Kapalua at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel and happened to
come across James. I didn't know you went there for your honeymoon. That's where we went for ours, too.
Yeah.
Kapalua.
Yeah. Me too.
2000. Kapalua Bay Hotel.
All three of you?
Yeah.
Kapalua Bay Villas.
Yeah, okay. That's where we were, too.
Well, all what three of you?
That's crazy. That's crazy.
I did not know that.
Wow. A little moment, a little rainbow.
Yeah, we're having a little bonding right here.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we're at our honeymoon and see James Worthy coming down the hall, and Cheryl's like, "Oh wow, that's James Worthy." I'm like, "It'd be awesome to, like, you know, hang out with him." And so the next night, she runs into him at the bar and just starts chatting him up, saying, "You know, it's great seeing you, having a good time. I went to UNC Chapel Hill. You know, my husband used to live there." Blah blah blah.
She did not say that. You just added that.
Oh no, no, you can ask her. and so later on that evening, I'm sitting across from her, and he comes up from behind her, and my eyes just start getting wide. I'm like, "Oh my God, it's James Worthy!" And so he goes, "Are you the Tar Heel I talked to earlier that evening?" She's like, "Yeah." He goes, "You and your husband want to come over and talk to me and my girlfriend?" And so for our honeymoon, we got a chance to talk to James Worthy. And of course I was like a, you know, pig in shit. I was like,
and for our listeners, Pope was a Lakers fan until they were no longer any good after that.
That's yeah. True. Big James Worthy, big game James. And so, you know, I got to ask him the question that everybody wanted to know, which is, what the fuck were you thinking when Freddie Brown threw you the ball? And he just laughed and he goes, yeah, everybody asked me that question. He goes, honestly, he goes, I was scared shitless because coach was going to be mad at me because I was in the wrong position. Because if you watch the film, he's actually not where he should be on defense. And so Freddie got confused, thought he was his own, you know, Georgetown player. And he passed him the ball. And I said, well, so when you got the ball, what did you do? He goes, I just started running, man. Cause I didn't know what to do. Everybody's yelling and screaming at me. I just wanted to get down the court as fast as possible for the game to be over. So that was kind of a really cool kind of sports extended moment. I guess any of the Carolina championship, I've been fortunate to go to Final Fours, but really the game that sticks out, and, you know, it's not a championship game, but it damn sure felt like it, was when we got to witness in the Final Four in New Orleans, another place where House had his great moment, when Carolina beat Duke in the Final Four. That was kind of like the ultimate game in the ultimate place, my birth town, you know, Carolina beating Duke. It was awesome. So I've got some others.
What was that? Just 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Yeah, it was 22.
22.
I know, yeah. Right? It was Hubert's first year. And I guess SMU winning their first game at home after the death penalty, that was another opportunity, my first opportunity, I guess, to rush a field. Because we didn't have much success at SMU when I was in college. But right after, in law school, we finally won a game and rushed the field, tore the goalpost down. I think we beat UConn on like a last-second play in the end zone. I mean, UConn sucked.
Blah, blah, blah.
Carolina sucked. I mean, SMU sucked.
He can't even remember which team he's talking about now.
Is there a time limit on this?
And then any Cubs game during the summer, sitting in the bleachers, doesn't matter who they're playing, drinking old style and having a brat, whether it's a beer snake or just hanging out with the boys, that's probably my favorite sports moment.
All right. Good stuff. All right, Russo, I'm going to let you go last on this one. So I'm going to go ahead and jump in here. I got a couple. I guess I sort of like Pope. I didn't necessarily get the whole assignment. I kind of went with things that I was at to remember. And a bunch of them, of course, I can't talk about any of this without Randy Johnson's perfect game that I was at. I think there's only been, what are we up to, 22 perfect games now. And to be at one of them is pretty cool. I remember the moment where I looked up at the scoreboard and I knew he had a no-hitter. And I kept trying to figure out who he had to go through to keep the no-hitter going. And I kept finishing with the ninth batter. And that's when I was like, wait a minute, this is not just a no-hitter. Because, you know, like, you kind of lose track of that. But I just kept counting and like, holy shit, this is a perfect fucking game. And so I remember that being there. Cal Ripken.
Was that when he was on, he was pitching for the D-backs or the Marlins?
Yes. Diamondbacks beat the Braves.
D-backs. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Cal Ripken streak week. I wasn't there for either the tying or the breaking game, but the whole week was really just unbelievably well choreographed in Baltimore. When it got to the fifth inning, they put up the rule, the baseball rule about when a game becomes official, and they had the bird out in the warehouse, the Oriole bird, unfurlow another a number to go over and cover it up. And it was just a really cool event the way they did that. Strasburg's first game, electric. That might be the most electric event I've ever been at. The Nats were still not good. They knew that they had this guy coming up who at the time was as hyped as Paul Skeens is or was. And the call up, I think it was June 14th. The place was packed. It was just buzzing. And Strass was unbelievable. I think he struck out 14 in seven innings or something like that. And I mean, that was one of the most intense electric events I've ever been at. I was lucky enough to be at the game where Art Monk set the record for most receptions in a career. I think that's been broken, I think, now, but he passed Steve Largent, and it was pretty cool because it was a Monday night game and he needed like five receptions and the Skins were up two touchdowns, three touchdowns, like they used to be back in the day. And Mark Rippon just kept dropping back. Like, you know, it was like garbage time, didn't really mean anything. And you saw him take the snap and drop back and throw to Monk, and you're like, they're going to go for this. They're going to do it. That was fun. I think I've talked about this before here, but the home run derby in DC was just unbelievable. And that was with Harper was still a Nat and needed something like, you know, I don't know, 16 home runs and needed seven of them in the last 30 seconds and just one after the other, after the other. And that was another just wild, wild moment to be at. The Hail Jaden or Hail Noah, whatever we're calling it, this past year against the Bears. I'm not sure how you beat that. An actual Hail Mary from, you know, your own 35-yard line to win the game on the last play. That was pretty awesome. Pope, I'm going to take a little bit of a page out of your book and maybe a tiny, tiny bit of revenge. Not really, but the 2007 Elite Eight game for Georgetown against North Carolina.
Great comeback.
And it was just, and what I remember most about that was actually being at a bar in Atlanta with the Georgetown Club of Atlanta. And, you know, we were pretty much dead in that game with 2.5 minutes to go and just went wild to come back and tie the game up and then just crushed North Carolina in the overtime. I mean, it was like they didn't even bother coming out on the floor. And I just remember being with that group of people. World Series, three games, lost all three at home, but won the series. It's another great moment. House was tweaking me about Darryl Green earlier today, and I was at the game where he chased down Eric Dickerson Dickerson broke free and was on his way to an easy touchdown. And then all of a sudden you see this guy streaking across the field. I think he closed, you know, like 60 yards on him or something, took him down, saved a touchdown. And then the all-time best for me was running an actual event I participated in, running the Marine Corps Marathon in October of 2001, right after 9/11, and running past the Pentagon.
Wow.
I get chills. I mean, I have chills thinking about
That's cool.
There was a hole in the side of the Pentagon, and I'm actually getting teared up over it. There was one guy in a cherry picker waving a flag, and it was complete silence. Just all you could hear were footsteps. And you have to go through a tunnel. And as soon as we hit that tunnel, the USA chants broke out. Oh, God. I mean, total chills. That's number one for me.
That is great.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah. Rooster, what do you got?
You know, I have a lot of old-time New York memories that I can tick through, but none of them compare to what I'm going to end up with. I was at the game where LT broke Joe Theismann's leg.
Oh,
that was unbelievably memorable for a bad reason. Another memorable play for a bad reason for me was I was at the game where Larry Zonka fumbled on the 1 yard line and Herm Edwards from the Eagles returned it 99 yards for a touchdown, which was like the final slap in the face to a shitty season. And, you know, just year for the Giants. We were Joe Pisarcik was our starting quarterback.
Yeah.
And the crowd was chanting for Randy Dean, who was the third string quarterback. They didn't even want the second string guy. And it was that bad. Then, of course, the Giants Super Bowls after that were so memorable for me. And when I was even younger, I watched the Knicks Willis Reed moment with my dad. That was really, really memorable. And then my dad and I went to the Yankees game where Ron Guidry, Louisiana Lightning, the Gator, struck out 19. It was just an incredible performance. Wow. And I was thinking about all those, and then I was like, what really sticks with me? And none of them compares to the feelings I had post 9/11 when baseball returned to New York City. And the first game was the Mets versus the Braves on September 21st. And then the Yanks played the Rays on September 25th. And that got a little more coverage, you know. Rudy was there, the whole thing, you know, America's mayor at the time. It was just, I mean, it was the best of the country. It was like sports was showing us how good we could all be. We were all together. We were all just happy to be there. Didn't matter who won. In fact, the Yankees lost that game to the Rays of all teams. But it was a beautiful moment, and we need more of that in this country because we're in a really, really bad place.
Yeah, well said. Well said.
It would be really fun predicting Milk's memories. Maybe we should just do that to mock him.
Don't they begin and end with Tom Brady?
His first T-ball single was probably the peak of his career.
I know. He's going to go. He's going to go with his Gator National Championships in basketball, and he's going to go with the Tebow National Championships in football, and he's going to go with Brady the Grifter getting him a national
All good. Super all good Bowl, for him. All good.
Super Bowl at
Can't
home.
Can't take that away from him. All good.
In Tampa. What else you got, Milk? What else you got? The Lightning. Did we forget the Lightning?
Yeah, don't forget the Lightning.
Right. The Lightning. They were a powerhouse until this year.
Well, we joke because we love. We're missing Milk tonight. And actually, Rooster, Milk's company helps us out do this podcast, right?
They sure do. Milk's company is called Injury Board, and it is an exclusive marketing company that purposely includes only the best plaintiff's lawyers in the country, lawyers who are the leaders in their community and at the bar. And if you think that you would like to be a member of this group and get referrals from lawyers from out of state who are in that category, check out injuryboard.org.
We're all IB members, so Definitely, if you have questions, feel free to reach out to us on that. Okay, let's move on. We're going to hit some kind of quick hitters here, like pre-buzzer beater kind of stuff. Pope, we got a little bit of news out of college football this past week. Tell us what's going on there.
Well, yeah, you know, the college football playoff, 12-team this year was very controversial because the top four seeds got were the conference champions with automatic bids, the top four that were ranked in the college football playoff final rankings. And because of some upsets, you had some teams like Boise State and Arizona State win their leagues who should not have been given a bye as a top four team. Gave them an unfair advantage, and it kind of skewed the whole rest of the playoffs. So in their infinite wisdom, finally, college football playoff committee fixed that. And so now they're just going to go straight 1 through 12 based on the final rankings. And so the teams that will get byes will be the four best teams. Five automatic qualifiers will be still winners of the five conferences, but they're not guaranteed a bye. If they suck, they're not going to get a bye. They're going to go play on the road against a much better powerhouse football team. Last year, you know, some of the really bad matchups in the quarterfinals when you had Boise State and Arizona State being the home teams against Texas and Penn State, you will not see that again next year or this year, whatever it is. This football season, you're going to see much better matchups, and you won't have an Oregon that's undefeated number one team playing an Ohio State in the quarterfinals where they ended up losing because they're going to be rewarded by playing a lesser team, as it should be, rewarding their body of work. So it's much fairer, and it'll I think it'll be better for the matchups, for the TV ratings, and so looking forward to it.
Pretty funny. This is why you don't buy a car in the first model year that it comes out. I mean, the NCAA tripped in the very first year they rolled out this playoff of 12 teams. I think it was pretty obvious what they needed to do, but I like Pope said, I'm glad they fixed it right away.
I mean, they only had 65 years to think about how to do it right.
Right.
So, I mean.
And most people think this is the last step before you're going to get a 16-team playoff, which probably will come in the next contract, which is in a couple years.
Mo money.
We've crushed the NCAA. We'll continue to do so. All deservedly so. All right. Well, let's move from the fake college games to the enhancement games. House, what's this shit all about?
Okay. I mean, this should take exactly 3 seconds, but again, talk about money. You know, now that there's controversy in the Olympics and, you know, players, competitors can't, you know, all these things, like, yeah, just like you guys talked about last week. So there's almost like an acknowledgement here that after all, some people do use enhancements for their performance. And so now there's – I don't even know who's behind it. Was it on ESPN? Like, does ESPN either get the rights to this or I forget who the organizer is, but there is going to be
– It's the Ocho.
The Ocho. The enhanced games where it's fair game. If you want to – you know, basically dope up and lift weights, go for it. If you want to dope up and – so the notion will be like if people actually did enhance their body in whatever way they want, what would be the 100-meter time? What would be the top weight that could be lifted? What would be the fastest lap that someone could swim? This thing is the dumbest thing I have ever heard, and in advance of it, we're going to punch it. During it, we're going to punch it. We're not going to celebrate the records with the asterisks on it. I really hope for these people, the sake of their health, they don't injure themselves doing this. This is just a debacle waiting to happen. When someone's heart explodes in the middle of the competition on TV, I guess that'll be the last of the enhanced games.
I hope everybody just ignores it. Which I hope we do too. Let's ignore it. Let's not talk about this again. There's no reason we should be celebrating cheatings. Fuck the enhanced games.
Hey, man, if you look at the leadership list on their website, it looks like a team of Bond villains all put together on here. It's really pretty gross.
Jose Canseco is their spokesman. Yeah. Right? Am I right?
I don't know.
I'm just guessing.
No, but there is a a relative of yours, perhaps, Rooster, Tim Phelan.
No, nope. Check this out. Never heard him.
Just saying. All right. Moving on from that, hopefully never to discuss again. You know, kind of, gosh, along those lines of athletes, we got to talk a little about Ohtani coming back to pitch. And is this a good idea? Yeah, I mean, so he's pretty far removed from the surgery. I think he had the surgery in 2023. So we're pretty far. I mean, you know, they're certainly not rushing it. And it seems like the plan is to bring him back pretty slowly, work him in. He finally did face some live batters. I think just simulation kind of stuff. Man, why are you doing this, though?
He hit 97 miles an hour.
Yeah.
His first
I saw the movement on one of his pitches was ridiculous. But yeah. But why? Why?
I mean, here, I guess.
Think the answer to why is that the Dodgers starting pitching staff is decimated right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, first of all, Tommy John surgery is pretty consistent, pretty successful. You know, most of these guys, you know, they say everybody gets a second elbow in the baseball, and it's 8 years. It's good for 8 years before you see drop off. It's not, I mean, when we were all younger, it seems like a long time ago now, it was new, right? It's Tommy John surgery was like, oh, God,
I remember Tommy John, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah.
that guy's never, you know, you'd say that guy's never going to be the same.
And not the underwear, but the pitcher.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a new sponsor.
Pope, do you wear Tommy John?
Let's not. Let's just end this. Let's just end this right now. This is a family show. No, but you know, it was a kiss of death at one point. And now it just means you're going to miss 16 months. You're probably not going to really be back until your second year removed. So is there a risk? I think the biggest risk they face is having him distracted from knocking the cover off the ball every time he's at the plate. But the reality is before he injured himself, what was he, a top 10 pitcher in Major League Baseball? I mean, he was in
contention for the Cy Young the year before he got hurt. Top five.
This is not a sideshow to this guy being the best hitter in baseball. This is legit.
But I kind of forget the history here. When he did get injured and he couldn't pitch, how long did that take him out of the lineup as a batter? Any time or did it just shut him down as a pitcher? That's my question. Is if he throws out his arm because he just shouldn't be throwing curveballs and sliders and whatever other pitches are in his arsenal, does that take him out of the batter's box as a hitter? Because you take 18 home runs and all his RBIs and the most dangerous offensive weapon the National League away, then what?
I think if I'm remembering, so I'm trying to look it up real fast here, I think he did continue to bat. I think he finished out the year. He tore his UCL on August 24th of 2023. And I think he continued playing and continued hitting. So, and your guy, Bryce Harper, came back, right? I mean,
came back. I just think if there's any risk to him and, you know, playing at the plate, I don't know why you do it. I mean, with this organization's farm system, I know they've had pitching injuries this year, and I know he was once a dominant pitcher. I'd be curious if this guy is truly all the way back and if there's any risk of taking him out of the lineup, because if it is, cake ain't worth the candle for me.
Yeah, it's dicey.
Anybody see the Mets game last night? I was watching it. The announcer was going on and on about whoever the pitcher was, their Sonny or the Japanese pitcher the Mets have, hasn't given up a, you know, leadoff hit, a home run.
Are they Senga?
Blah, blah, blah. Senga. And, yeah. And like the next pitch, Ohtani's batting leadoff just crushes this thing into the upper deck in right center. I mean, just his hitting skills are off the chart.
It's Japanese on Japanese crime.
Yeah, if you didn't need any more evidence that there really is kind of an East Coast bias in sports, it's Ohtani, because somehow he's still not appreciated in my book for what he is. I mean, we have the opportunity to watch probably one of the two greatest players to ever pick up and swing a bat, And I'm just not sure with him on the West Coast. I still think it's underappreciated, believe it or not.
Yeah, David Cohn was one of the broadcasters, and he was saying the same thing.
Yeah. All right, let's hope for the best, because I don't think anybody wants to see him out of baseball or missing time at all. So unless you're the Padres. House, you know, by the way, before we transition to one victory for House's teams, I do want to note the Phillies, man, they're on a tear. I think they have the best record in baseball all of a sudden, right?
They what, 10 in a row?
Yeah, well, they lost last night to Oakland when Strom didn't come through, and that's going to be the real question mark going forward. I think one of you guys punched Alvarado last week. I think it was Rooster for his PED use. I want to punch him, too, for overeating. But besides that,
one thing has something to do with the other.
It actually did. He claims that whatever weight loss drug he used, he didn't know that would actually enhance his performance. Maybe we should put Jose Alvarado in the enhanced games. But the Phillies are going to need bullpen help at the trade deadline. I don't think Jordan Romano is the answer. And so we'll see. But for right now, we have the best record in baseball.
You also going to need offensive help, too, because your outfield is shit in the bed. But let's not talk about that any longer than we have to. This tush push thing, it's lives to fight another day, huh, House?
Well, you guys, when you shoot for the king, you better hit the head. The Eagles, look, it's just a play that can't be stopped. But because they're so good at it, and I think the Eagles successfully got a first down or a touchdown on the tush push 103 or something times. And the next after that was the Bills at like 50 something. And the next after that was the Bears a lot less. And it's just unabashedly jealousy that the owners, I mean, here's all you need to know. The Eagles 2025 opponents voted 13-1 to ban the push. They're afraid of it. The teams that aren't facing them thought they should probably, it was right in the middle, 9-8. So this is not about safety.
By the way, the one was Dan Campbell, the Lions. Look, he's like, I like the push. We're going to stop that damn thing.
I really got to give credit to Jason Kelce. There was some controversy at the Super Bowl inside of Philly because Kelce was rooting for his brother rather than the team that he had retired from and won a Super Bowl with. And some Eagles fans felt betrayed about it. But 10 minutes before this vote occurred, Jeffrey Lurie walks into the owner's room with none other than Jason Kelce. And apparently that was a pretty persuasive thing because Jason Kelce walked these owners through the play, literally putting up film, saying it never, ever jeopardized his health or safety, ever was resulting in any kind of injury, how this play is done, why it's not a safety concern. I don't know whether it really persuaded folks, but I really got to give that guy credit for saying this isn't just for the Eagles. It's for a play in football that should be kept around. Some of the owners were disappointed, but they said, look, you know, like even if we got rid of this thing, there's this, the quarterback sneak is still going to be in football. They'll come up with other plays. I just think they should, if there's a successful play in sports, we should just leave it alone. You know, if all of a sudden people are shooting, you know, 45% from 3-point line, I don't know that we really need to move it back another 3 feet just so it can go down to 10%, you know, 3-point conversion. It's a successful play. It won't last forever that way. People will start figuring out how to stop it. People figure out other ways to do it. If you ban the tush push and the Eagles or the Commanders, the Cowboys or the Giants or the Buccaneers come up with a solution for how to get a first down, what are you going to do, ban the next very successful play? I'm very glad that there weren't so many votes for it, but not enough votes against it to take it out of competition. And as the Eagles say, push on.
Is that dead for the year, Toby?
It's dead for the year. It's going to keep coming back. And what I predict is going to happen is the Eagles are going to start demonstrating that they, particularly the Eagles, that they don't just need the tush push to get first downs. And they're going to probably make this kind of controversy go away.
Now, I will say this. I've said it on this podcast before. I don't think it should be banned. My view on it is don't let the Eagles get into, you know, third and inches or fourth and goal and inches. Just don't let them get there if you don't like it. Having said that, there better not be any fucking whining coming out of Philadelphia the first time somebody gets blown up and gets hurt on that play, because teams are gonna start trying to figure out. I mean, everybody was you know, all upset about Frankie Louvu going over the top at the play. You got to do something. Why? How's it different? You got to try. If you're gonna do the play, then you got to let teams try.
Not to make yourself a human missile, and before the ball is snapped, jump into the backfield. That really is a danger.
No, you can't have it both ways.
You can't have it both ways. Exactly. That's the point, is that that's the kind of stuff teams are going to start doing. You're going to see human missiles flying from the left, from the right, over the top. Everybody's going to be going in there. You're going to see some guys going low to knock the center's
low
legs
is
out
where
from
to
under
go.
Them. Yeah, I mean, there's going to be stuff, and somebody's going to get hurt. And if it happens, you can't say, well, that was dirty. I mean, this is the play, and teams are going to try and stop it. They're going to try. These guys are going to try and do anything they can to stop it.
Setting aside Frankie Louvu, Bison, do you really think if the Commanders and their new formed offensive line and their superstar mobile quarterback are capable of also being great at the tush push, and they're in the playoffs, and it's a half yard to go. It's a half yard to go, and someone launches themselves into Jaden Daniels four times in a row, because what difference does it make? Don't you think there should be a penalty to prevent someone from doing it four times in a row like that?
No.
Oh, come on. I'm going to remember that too.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. That's fine. Okay. What else we got? Hey, I woke up to a little bit of a surprise today in the NBA Finals. I was in Indiana last night and went to bed halfway through the third quarter or so, because I had to be at the airport at the crack ass this morning. Rooster, what the hell happened last night? And who's looking good right now to come out of these series?
The House has been talking a lot recently about how the Knicks-Timberwolves trade is unique because it worked out so well for both teams, and it has. And both teams are in the final four right now, basically in the conference finals, and they're both 1-2. They're both down 2-1. And so the question is, which one of these teams that are down 2-1 has the best shot? And I still think it's the Knicks, only because every Knicks Pacers game has been tight. I mean, it's been, you know, a nail biter till the end, basically. The OKC seems to be a superior team to all three of the other teams. And I think they're eventually going to dispense of Minnesota, which is a good team. And I'm rooting for Minnesota. I really like my former Knicks players on that team, Dante and Julius Randle. But I think OKC is going to dispense of that team. The Knicks have a shot now that they've won one on the road. If they get the next one and they're 2-2, who knows what's going to happen in that series.
Well, and Cat finally showed up.
Cat shows up last night and scores 20 points and gets 8 rebounds in the fourth quarter.
The fourth quarter.
And doesn't do a bunch of stupid shit for once.
Why is it, particularly in this series with the Knicks-Pacers, that absolutely no lead is safe? And we're not talking about 5 or 8 point leads. We're talking about gigantic leads. What the hell is happening for two teams that are this incredible to have made it to the Eastern Conference Finals that they can't play defense in the fourth quarter?
Well, for the Knicks, they're just relentless. They refuse to give up. They never give up. They're going to play you until the final whistle goes off. For the Pacers, they're just a superior shooting team to the Knicks, and really to maybe any other team right now. They've got five guys in their starting lineup who could score 20 any night, and they don't. And they're not going to have off nights. Like, you're not going to hear about Halliburton, Turner, Naismith, Siakam, Nembhard, like, having bad shooting nights in this playoffs. They're just not going to. Some of them are going to yield to the others. Whereas with the Knicks, you're going to get your 30 plus out of Brunson and 20 plus out of Cat, but unless you get 20 out of OG, you're sunk. And that's a iffy situation, because the other guys are not stepping up for the Knicks. You know, Hart, Bridges, Robinson, they just haven't been consistently scoring. McBride, whereas the Pacers are. And I also think, I hate to say this, but I also think that the Pacers are better coached. I think Rick Carlisle is a better coach right now. He's using his entire bench smart in smart situations so that his starters are well rested. And at the end of the quarters, the Knicks, you know, starters who are basically playing the whole game, with the exception of maybe McBride coming in a little bit and Robinson, are gassed. So the Knicks are, the Pacers are better coached and they're better shooters. So they should win the series. But if I had to say who has the better shot of the upset right now, I would give it to the Knicks, because OKC just looks like they're unstoppable.
I think your problem, Rooster, for the Knicks is you're playing 11 against 7. Mm-hmm. And the Pacers, they're really deep. They're just really deep. And Brunson, he's a one-man wrecking crew, but at some point, 11 versus 1, it's just too hard to compete. I just think the depth of the Pacers will carry them, at least through this series.
I don't mean to sound like a whiner, but the refs haven't helped either. They're calling some shit on
Brunson. They're
calling stuff on Brunson that is absurd.
4,000.
I will say this. I mean, the legend might have died for a little bit in the whole rivalry between the Knicks Pacers, but it is back, and it is back for good.
Oh, it is on. Yeah.
These two franchises are going to hate each other for the next several years.
Yeah. Yep. And that's good. Gents, who's got a punch?
It's this week's punchable face.
I have a punch. You guys remember, of course you remember, talk about memories. You guys remember that crucial playoff play between the Rams and the Saints when there was absolutely unquestionably, positively defensive pass interference, and it wasn't called, and the Saints lost, and the Saints were all upset about it, and they even had some fans that started like suing the refs and suing the NFL. I don't know if you remember all that. Well, yesterday was the final day of the English Premier League soccer season, and this year, five teams will make the Champions League, which is the best competition of soccer of all the best teams in Europe. And so there was still, based on, you know, whether or not you get 3 points for a victory, there was still the possibility that a few different teams were playing for the final spot in Champions League. And one of them was Aston Villa, who was playing against Manchester United, who, you know, really had one of the worst seasons in its history, finishing ultimately 15th in league. In the 71st minute, the score was 0-0, and the ball came towards the Manchester United goalie, and the Aston Villa player kicked the ball, what seemed to be in real time speed, out of the goalie's hands, freed up the ball, and scored. And the ref waved it off because you can't kick the ball out of the goalie's hands. But for a moment, Aston Villa was up 1-0. Moments later, after the goal was waved off, Manchester United scored and then got a penalty kick later on, 1-2, denying Aston Villa the possibility of going up to Champions League.
But we all can't be in Champions League, Tobe.
I know. Congrats to Tot on that Euro. After the game, the organization, like officially as an organization, it turns out that the match official, the lead referee of that game, wasn't the most experienced referee. It's not like, I mean, he was obviously a qualified Premier League ref, but it wasn't like, whatever, just like you guys have, like, you know, like we have umps for a World Series or refs that can be in a Super Bowl. Aston Villa released an actual press release and said that they were going to be submitting a formal complaint with the English Premier League about the refs that were selected for the game, that they weren't up to task, that they weren't qualified to be at that level of game. give me an effing break.
Oh, wow.
Like, come on. Sometimes the cookie doesn't crumble your way. To smear referees on a play that didn't go your way and then make it public about it, put it all over let me tell you something. I want to punch the crap out of Aston Villa, and I hope they get relegated next year. They're so bad. That is pathetic.
So
pathetic.
I just want to make sure we're documenting this moment just crystal clear. House, you are sticking up for the referees and punching a fan base that is complaining about the referees. Is that what's happening?
In England.
Okay. Oh, all right.
I
just want to make sure we're clear on the record here. All right. Good punch. I like it. I'm always happy to punch people who complain about the referees. So anybody else have a punch?
I do. Not long ago, we punched the Cleveland Guardians fans for their just awful, ugly comments to a Red Sox player having to do with his, you know, coming out about mental health issues. Well, now I'm going to punch the Red Sox fans because they signed Liam Hendricks back as their closer this year. And he's having a rough year. And the Sox fans, according to Liam Hendricks, have come out and just been awful with him in social media and in the comments, saying things to him like, you know, sending death threats to him. Death threats to his wife.
What?
Commenting that they wish he would commit suicide.
What?
Oh my God.
Oh,
and that they wished he had died from the cancer that he overcame.
Oh my God.
I mean, and I think it seems like from reporting what's behind some of this, like some of the most egregious comments come from a bookie who's lost some money on games that Liam blew. The save.
Actually.
And it's like, dude, if you are behaving like this over lost bets, then you're betting money you can't afford to bet. Get a fucking life, man.
It goes farther than that.
It's disgusting. It's embarrassing. These are human beings. These people are out there entertaining you. It doesn't give you the right to say this about anyone else. And for everyone who does that kind of thing, I really wish the league would call the player in for a meeting with that fan and let the player beat the crap out of him because they're a bunch of fucking cowards.
And you know what? It's embarrassing for those people's parents, the people saying it. How were you raised? I mean, what is wrong with you? What kind of human being are you that you say something like you should have died from the cancer that you got
it's
over?
Disgraceful.
I mean, it's just disgraceful. You're just a bad human being. You're just a bad human being. That goes beyond a punch. Sickening.
And like I said, if your betting has anything to do with it, then you're betting money you can't afford to bet, and you just need to come to grips with that because it's turning you into an ugly, horrible human being.
Yeah, truth. Well, I hope somebody's got a lasso.
I got a good lasso.
All right, I got one too.
You first.
All right, I'll go first. All right. Mine's kind of it's a little bit of a homer lasso, but it is a good story. Kiebert Ruiz, who is the Nationals catcher, came over in the, I guess, in the Scherzer trade. When we sent Scherzer and Trey Turner to the Dodgers, Ruiz was one of the guys who came over. And Ruiz, his parents had not seen him play in a game in something like 10 or 11 years. The last time they saw him play was as a teenager in the Dominican Summer League. And they finally got to see him this past Thursday night at Nats Park. Ruiz doubled and with his first at bat, got to wave to his family, which is a pretty cool story for a guy. I mean, that's, you know, these guys, it's pretty glamorous to be a Major League Baseball player, but some of them have given up a lot to get there, a lot. And it literally, his family had never seen him play in the majors and hadn't even seen him play a game in 10 plus years. So I think that's a pretty cool story that they finally got an opportunity to be there and see him. And he delivered. He was 2-for-5. He's actually having a great year after a really down year last year. So good for Kiebert Ruiz and his family.
Nice.
House, what do you got?
Well, did you guys know what is thought to be the richest single game in sports? Did you know that in the English Championship League, to move up to the Premier League, everybody knows, we've talked about this before, that like we should do this kind of in life, you know, promotion and relegation, that, you know, the bottom three teams of English Premier League move down, and the top three teams move up. And the way you decide the top three teams for the second division move up. And the way you decide that is the top two by record get automatic move up. And then there's a playoff between the third and the fourth place team in the second division. And the winner of that gets $200 million. So $200 million so they can have a jump start and they're not just like, you know, because you don't want to send them into Premier League and not be able to afford players and not be able to have some kind of competitive opportunity to be in the Premier League. So it's thought to be the richest game in sports. $200 million to the winner of who is in that playoff game.
Who gives that to them?
I think it's the Premier League. I think it's, you know, the top division sets aside $200 million. And so it's big, 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 big deal. And this year it was between Sheffield United and Sunderland. And Sheffield United had finished like 14 points ahead of Sunderland. Like Sunderland was a big underdog. Sheffield United goes up and down. They're not out of the Premier League a lot. Sunderland hadn't been there in 8 years. And the match is tied 1-1 and it goes into injury time. And on comes in the pitch like late in the game, this kid of all things named Tom Watson. And Tom Watson's a pretty liked name over there in England. Tom Watson is 19 years old. He came up in the Sunderland Academy. He was such a promising player that one of the teams, Brighton and Hove Albion in the main Premier League, basically bought the rights to this kid, Tom Watson, because he looks like he's going to be a player. So this is going to be his last match ever for Sunderland. He's developed his whole career in their, basically in their youth academy. And this 19-year-old kid comes on and in the injury time with just minutes to go, scores a goal to send Sunderland up into the Premier League. Now here's, if you just don't have chills yet from this true Ted Lasso moment, many, 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 many decades ago, there was a Tom Watson who was a manager for Sunderland. In the early 1900s, he left to join Liverpool to become their manager and brought Liverpool, Tom Watson brought Liverpool their first ever championship in 1901. And wouldn't you know it, Liverpool wins the Premier League this year, and Tom Watson sends Sunderland, the same namesake, up into the Premier League this year. Come on. That is – where are you, Jason Sudeikis? That's Ted Lasso stuff.
It's pretty amazing.
All right. That's good. That's good stuff. $200 million. Holy smokes.
So do all three teams get $200 each?
No, I don't think so. I could be wrong about that. Leeds and Burnley won, moved up automatically because they were the top two. But I could be wrong about that, but I don't think Leeds and Burnley do, but that would seem to be unfair. So I have to double check that. Someone will, our producer, I'm sure, will figure that out. Put in a
I'm
note.
Sure.
Yeah.
Not.
All right. Who's got a buzzer beater?
I've got one. The Cornell Big Red won their first national championship in any sport since 1977 today. This is a weekend where when my kids were younger, I spent every Memorial Day weekend either at Rutgers or Ravens Stadium at the National Lacrosse Championships. And Cornell beat Maryland today to win the championship for lacrosse. And in the past, they've won some hockey and lacrosse championships, but nothing since 1977. So go Big Red.
Wow.
All right. Good one. Always happy to hear the Torps lose. So that's good. Happy for that. Anybody else got a buzzer?
NHL. Dallas Stars are probably on their last breath. Edmonton looks like superior team. They're down 2-1. They got game 4 in Edmonton. If they lose that game, probably night out for for Dallas, and you're looking at a rematch of the Edmonton and Florida Stanley Cup final.
Again.
Go Edmonton. Hey, I have another buzzer. Along the lines of this New York love on reminiscing about Memorial Weekend. I just want to say, suck it, Juan Soto. 50 games in, and he's batting .246. Loser.
That statue building on Bison.
So.
Okay. He sucks. He sucks.
You guys have your batting average. Still calling out batting average.
What else is he doing?
You're showing your age.
What else is he doing?
Slow though.
Besides hitting long fly balls to the
it's embarrassing. Loser. It's embarrassing for you guys. Loser. You're up, House. Go ahead.
I always think this part of the sports season is kind of more fun than it gets attention on television. I think the college baseball tournament is so, so fun because, you know, in college basketball, a lot of these kids that are in the tournament, you might see in the NBA, the same thing in college football, a lot of them get drafted. A lot of these kids, very, very, very few are going to make it to the bigs. You know, from the place it goes from high school or college baseball to make it all the way past single A, double A, triple A into the majors, it gets really, really, really narrow to get through there. So this is just kids in college having fun. Yeah, there's some money in, there's some NIL stuff, but not really. This is pretty good amateur baseball. So now we've got 16 teams on the road to Omaha, 13 top 16 seeds. There's 64 teams on the road to Omaha. But out of the 64 teams, 13 are from the SEC. I mean, like totally, totally dominant. This year, the number one overall seed is again Vanderbilt, who's obviously very dominant in college basketball. But you've got Vandy
and
Texas.
By Ohio Wesleyan's own Tim Corbin.
Boom. Vandy, Texas, Arkansas, Auburn, four SEC teams, the top four seeds. Also LSU, Georgia, Tennessee, Ole Miss, all in the top 16. Really in the top 16, outside of the big time blue blood schools, the only ones that, you know, we get to see is kind of like not normally on the stage are teams like Southern Miss or Coastal Carolina. But otherwise, this is the big of the big schools.
They're a powerhouse in baseball, Coastal Carolina.
Yeah, they are a powerhouse in college baseball, which is, you know, that's the kind of one sport they can actually do that. But otherwise, all these other schools that are in it are the big-time schools. I love this tournament. I'm sure you'll hear more once we finally get to Omaha.
Yep, sounds good. Good stuff. We got to go out there one year, guys. We got to go to Omaha for sure.
That'd be fun.
One of these years. All right, I'm going to get my buzzer in here. And yesterday was probably the greatest racing day of the year. You have time as it happened order, you had the Monaco Grand Prix, which really happened on Saturday, I think, for all intents and purposes, just because of that, the way that circuit is, whoever wins pole is in such good shape. And of course, that's how it turned out with Lando Norris taking the win, although a really exciting qualifying with him setting a course record to take pole. Then you moved into the Indy 500, which I'm going to come back and say a couple things about. But the nightcap is the Coca-Cola 600 in NASCAR, which was won by Ross Chastain. So Indy, I mean, the Indy 500 was wild. It's wild. And I'm not going to spend all the time on the differences. Alex Palou won it. He's won, I think, 5 out of 6 races this year. It was a pretty good race. He took over, I think, with 14 laps to go. He passed to take the lead, and it was close to the end. Erickson, this guy behind him, Marcus Erickson, who's I think won the Indy before, was right on his heels. In fact, Palou, the two cars were in front of him were on the lead lap. So because they were on the lead lap, they don't have to move over for the leaders. If they had been a lap behind, they would have had to get out of the way. But there was traffic, and it was definitely causing issues for Palou, and who held on to win it. There's clearly too many Uber drivers who are allowed to participate in the Indy 500, because the first 100 laps, I think we had like 9 cautions or something wild like that. A bunch of cars out. We lost one of the guys. Who was it who went out on the effectively Scott McLaughlin, not effectively what is the formation lap, the warm up lap. He crashed his car. We had the guy who had the pole, Schwartzman. He lost braking powers. He was coming into the pits at one point, almost killed half of his pit crew. That was exciting. One of the leaders at one point, Ryan Hunter Ray, he was in good shape. And with 30 laps to go, he pulls into the pits and his car stalls out. He never really got it going again. So it was pretty dramatic, a lot of fun. Yeah, big exciting day. And I had money on Pillow, so that was even more exciting.
Only him?
Bang.
I have a solution to the Monaco race. Because they're never going to be able to widen the track there. It's,
no.
You know, it's just like in an old city in France. I think they need to run that race with cars that they used in the 50s and 60s. And make the drivers, you know, drive those little Pinewood Derby looking race cars. That way they can pass each other. Because with these big Formula One cars, they can't pass each other.
And or the
for
Legos.
That one, for that so. One race, can imagine what the ratings would be. It would be awesome. You're welcome, Formula One.
We're going to run cars from the 50s and keep paying attention to batting average. Okay. No, actually, Rooster, there's actually an answer to this for it. The answer is next year, the cars with the 26 regulations, they're going to be both narrower and shorter. A lot of the size with the cars right now is for safety reasons, and with advances in technology, the cars are going to be smaller starting next year. Now, is it going to make it back to like it was in the 60s? I don't know if they're going to be that small, but the cars are going to be smaller and theoretically a little more nimble. So maybe that race will have a little more entertainment value.
There's not a lot of real estate there, but if they could just find one small area that they could expand either in length or width to allow for a DRS zone and allow for some passing. Because you're right, Rooster. I mean, that race starts and it's almost identical. I mean, you've got amazing cars like the Mercedes cars that could not get up into the top 10 that were clearly so much faster. Now, I guess you could say, well, that's what qualifying is for. But there should be an opportunity to move up into the top 10 if you don't make the top 10 in qualifying for a race.
Right. And if you're Leclerc and you've lost the pole by, you know, 1/100th of a second or less, you should be able to race the pole sitter for first place. And there's, if the guy, you know, once Norris got off the mark, well, when lights were out, that was it. The race was over.
Yeah. Well, let's see what happens next year with the new cars. So, but I do think it would be fun to see them in the 60s.
Yeah, be classic.
Yeah,
be fun.
We'd probably lose.
Go back to the classics.
We'd have 2 or 3 drivers die every year.
That too.
You know, whatever. Yeah. It'd be more entertaining.
Good for spice ratings. It up. Good for ratings.
All right, fellas. Good luck, Rooster, with the Knicks, and Pope. Maybe your stars will hold on. See you guys.
See ya.
Go Knicks.